Boston fans, this is what you've been waiting for.
Thomas, in the paint, tries to spin it up and down.
It's Celtics coverage on CLNSradio.com.
Into Crowder, takes it. Got it! 8 tenths of a second to go!
So what are you waiting for? Dial in right now and share your thoughts toll-free, 347-215-7771.
What up it is! Marcus Smart at the buzzer!
Welcome to the Celtics post-game show. I think year five, my fifth year, I think. It's Nick Gelso, my first game post-game show of the 2015-16 season. It's a loss. Celtics fall 95-87 to the San Antonio Spurs. Kept fighting back, but didn't have enough juice in the tank. Today's podcast is brought to you by, powered by Lynda.com. The online platform with over 3,000 on-demand video courses to help you strengthen your business, technology, and creative skills. We at CLNS Radio are going to give you a free trial to Lynda.com. Check it out. All you have to do is go to lynda.com/CLNS for your free trial. So, yes, it's Nick Gelso. So I think year five or year six, I'm not sure, but I do know we have a really, really special show lined up tonight. I know the Celtics lost, but it's probably a good time to get on a real expert in Celtics Nation. And this is going back many years to when I was just myself aspiring to be a podcaster for the Boston Celtics. And that's Justin Poulin of Celtic Stuff Live, the original Celtics podcaster. He and John Duke ran from the mid-2000s through around 2012, really paved the way for companies, media forms such as CLNS Radio. So thrilled to have Justin on. He'll be joining us shortly. And while we're waiting, let's quickly do some housekeeping. You can follow us on Twitter at CLNS Radio. And today, Chris Morrison will be manning the Celtics postgame show Twitter handle at CLNS Celts. P-game show. Chris will be handling that Twitter handle, be taking your tweets. We'll read them on air as he fishes us some cool stuff if you give us anything really to worthwhile to put on air. Anyway, yeah, the Celtics now fall to 1-2 on the regular season. I think probably the worst case scenario is what's gone, you know, come to fruition. And today on Celtics Beat on CLNS Radio, Larry H. Russell previewed the game. Unfortunately, he couldn't join us tonight. Something came up, but he did mention this was the worst possible scenario, knowing that the Celtics would naturally, hopefully, and they did, beat the Philadelphia 76ers on opening night, then fell to Toronto and really what was an ugly game. And then today, I felt fought valiantly against the San Antonio Spurs, and just came up short. They kept fighting back, got it within two possessions twice or three times down the stretch. And I think really what we talked about today on Celtics Beat this morning in the pregame show is kind of what happened. We said, Larry and I previewed this game and pretty much said that the Celtics cannot allow the San Antonio Spurs to get out quick and form a big lead because the team's just too good to come back against. And that's pretty much what ended up happening. Horrible first half, horrible first quarter from the Celtics. Only 13 points in that first quarter and only 18 in the second quarter. Looked like a late 90s game there with those low scoring turnouts. And then it was playing the catch-up game throughout. And they just didn't have enough steam at the end in the tank, not enough gas to pull it out. But they did fight valiantly. Shortly, the queue is already filling up here with callers. Celtics Nation, I think, is maybe a bit nervous, maybe excited to speak with Justin Poulin, who will be calling in shortly to chill with me for the rest of the show. And shortly, we will be taking your calls on the FanDuel toll-free call lines, 347-215-7771. Yes, we'll be taking your calls probably in about 10 minutes on the FanDuel toll-free call lines. Toll-free number again, 347-215-7771. The CLNS radio call lines are powered by FanDuel. FanDuel is the leader in one-week football, fantasy football, with more winners and more payouts. They're paying over $75 million a week this football season. I love the salary cap format. I do play fantasy football, believe it or not. You can pick any player you want for just 1 week. You're not stuck with a dog for the entire season. Entry actually just starts at $1 and anyone can play. Go to FanDuel.com, use the promo code Celtics, and you will get free play from CLNS Radio and FanDuel. Anyway, again, Celtics fall short, 95-87. Spurs with plus minus, there's really only pluses there if you're looking at each player's individual plus minus. They were led tonight by LaMarcus Aldridge, and again, this morning on the pregame show, you kind of saw. We talked about LaMarcus really trying to find his spot on this lineup. Well, he did tonight. He didn't shoot particularly well. Got to the line for 10 free throws, made 8. 8 for 18 from the field, 24 points. Kawhi Leonard chipped in with 19. The legendary Tim Duncan, big shot down the stretch, only chipped in with 7. And then Parker Quay came with 6, yet the Celtics still fell short. We have a caller we're going to go to right now. From TD Garden, it's the executive luxury suites chef at the Garden. He could give us a little bit of insight into what the crowd was like or even what they ate tonight. So, Chef Santos, we opened the call lines a bit early to get you on. What's going on?
Come on, brother.
You tell me, man. How was the Garden tonight?
Garden, man. It was a lot better than the last game.
Yep.
I thought, you know, we battled pretty hard. I mean, you know, for, you know, creeping back into the fourth quarter, I think we gave it a dueling effort. But, I mean, you know, Popovich has a deck on him that he's throwing out, you know, West. He's throwing out all these other players at us. And, you know, we don't really know who our top five is that's going to legitimately score for us. So it's kind of a tough one right now. I mean, Brad Stevens definitely has his hands full, but, you know, A for effort tonight. I think we found, you know, that we had some defensive pressure. I like how AB put it right on the defensive player of the year, right on the start. And, I think 1-2, I don't think Celtics Nation needs to be worried yet. I think we're in good hands, especially being in the Eastern Conference right now.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think it was the slow start that really just started the game, you know, a game off playing from behind. I hate that. And the Celtics did it again tonight. And you're just not going to do that against the Spurs. They almost came back, though. I'm imagining the crowd at the Garden was probably partially tanked, being it being a Sunday afternoon game. So clearly they were a bit more rowdy.
Yeah, we definitely were a little more feisty this game. I mean, it's a big game when a Western Conference team comes in. I mean, any Western Conference team pretty much can make it to the finals. So it's depending on, you know, it's putting our A game on. You know, like us in a couple years ago when we had the big three, everybody came in to knock us out. So we wanted to definitely put the pressure on them, and I think we did a pretty good job at it.
I think so too. I mean, like I said, down the stretch, the Celtics really pulled it together. Again, there are some concerns as far as the offense, figuring out what the right unit is for Stevens to have on the court. But Chef Brian, before we let you go, do you have any closing thoughts, man, from TD Garden, in the bowels of TD Garden, in the kitchens? What's going on? Last thoughts.
Chef's cooking in the store, man. We're in the weather. It's getting pretty good. It's fun. Boardroom is rocking tonight. We did some red velvet waffles, which was pretty fun, with some fried chicken wings. For the most part, we're doing pretty well. I mean, you know, I think Celtic Nation needs to hold their head up high. We're still going to be above 500 team, and at the end of the day, we're still going to get into the playoffs.
Good closing thoughts. I like keeping it positive. Thanks, Brian, for calling in, and we'll catch you next postgame show.
All right, brother. Take it easy.
All right, my man. Keep cooking. Right. That's Chef, Executive Luxury Suites Chef Brian Santos from TD Garden calling us from the Garden. Let's make that call sponsored by Audible.com. CLNS Radio, the CLNS Beat podcast series that Celtics beat, Patriots beat, Red Sox beat, and Audible are giving you a free audiobook from the world's largest online library. Audible.com is the leading provider of audiobooks with more than 180,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature, including fiction, nonfiction, sports. Bob Ryan's got a great book on there. Claim your free audiobook today, audiblepodcast.com/Celtics. That's audiblepodcast.com/Celtics. Now, really, I'm excited about this. It is my co-host joining me, and that is Justin Pullen of Celtic Stuff Live. Justin, I think you may be 5 years removed from our airwaves here at CLNS Radio.
Yeah, I think so. It's been a good long time, but it's nice to be back, and I'm thankful that you've got a spot for me to let me kind of contribute, because, you know, I've been getting excited again the last couple of years just watching Brad Stevens and this team develop.
I kind of am getting excited myself, knowing that you have the itch. I've been getting text barrages from you. And, you know, I've had basketball one-on-one growing up listening to Celtic Stuff Live. Now I get it one-on-one, text-to-text, man. And give me your thoughts on this early season, only 3 games in. Already, Celtics Nation hitting the panic button on social media annoys the hell out of me.
Yeah, I don't think there's any reason to panic. I think there's reasons to be a little frustrated and irritated at times during these last couple of games, especially. I mean, look, the Philly game, that's a game that they're supposed to win, and, you know, Philly would have it that way as well, right? So they don't want to necessarily win. I understand the players want to win, but the organization as a whole, you know, they got a plan, and, you know, they don't want to win. And so things aren't positioned necessarily well. But now, you know, you have the Atlantic Division rival and the Toronto Raptors, who obviously they're a team that's supposed to want to win that game. They gave us some fits, especially early on. And then, obviously, we're playing the perennial, you know, best team in the NBA, really, when you just take the sum of the last 15 years.
Yep.
You just can't you can't not be appreciative of the Spurs. I mean, in the same way that I'm appreciative of what Bill Belichick has done with the hometown Patriots, you have to, you know, tip your hat equally to Greg Popovich's Spurs. And, you know, I was surprised that they were able to climb back in this game. There are definitely some silver linings in the game today. But overall, it's obvious Stevens is still trying to figure out his rotations, his lineups. You know, you and I have talked a lot about front court pairings. That clearly has not worked itself out. I'm not even sure that I would have gone back to Isaiah Thomas as quickly in that fourth quarter as Stevens did tonight. I might have waited a little bit longer just because, you know, we've also got to watch a player like Marcus Smart emerge as a leader. And when he's out there with Thomas, I'm not sure he necessarily develops. And he had the hot hand and the effort tonight. So I think there's some things that Stevens, just on a snapshot after 3 games, is still trying to figure out for himself. There's a luxury to have depth. It's only a luxury when the team leaves its heart on the floor every minute that they're out there, right?
Mm-hmm.
When you have players that come out and don't play with energy, it's not a luxury. It's a liability. And I think we've seen that through the last 2 games. You know, that depth has been a liability more than a luxury. But I also have seen Stevens be able to manage a club down the stretch last year, and I have a feeling it's all going to come back together again. And there, like I said, there's silver linings from today's game that I think they're going to continue to carry forward.
You've not been around, so I got to ask you, you know, this team devoid of really a superstar player, so we're talking mainly depth. What can this team do? What is the potential for this team this season, let's say?
Well, the nice thing with some of the issues that they have with the depth is that they are different skills with the players. You know, if you have that depth, but and you have no superstar per se, and you have that kind of depth, but these players aren't able to necessarily do anything different than another player, and they're duplicating each other, then you got a problem. But I do see a roster that's filled with players that do different things, and so you know, in that regard, I think the sky's the limit. I'm not, I understand it's going to be very difficult to win a championship without a superstar, but I'm not convinced that this team can't make a lot of noise in the postseason without a superstar, provided, again, that Stevens figures out where these guys fit, how they fit together, what pairings work. If the chemistry is there and they play like a team and they move the ball and they defend with tenacity and they make use of that depth, I do think they can get, you know, out of the first round, maybe out of the second round. And I think a lot of it is, you know, even just to back up what Ian just said about whether or not there is a superstar that may be already on the team. Sure, it's going to take a little while. Players are going to emerge. I think Smart has taken a major step up from where he was last year. Just the confidence that we're starting to see out of him. And a lot of times, you know, that's what it takes to emerge. I mean, even you look at Kawhi Leonard, that's exactly how he's progressed,
yep.
right? Confidence. Look at him just close out the game tonight, you know,
yep.
the way that he played down the stretch. So I'm not convinced. I am convinced that there's not a superstar on this team and that Isaiah Thomas, you know, plays the role of one in terms of scoring load. But there isn't a player that couldn't be pulled in the fourth quarter for the Celtics and still have the team win. And, you know, that's how I look at it with a superstar. And if I'm sitting here now at the end of this game and I'm saying, I'm not really sure I would have left. I would have put Isaiah Thomas back in as quickly as I did. And I also would have considered not putting him back on the court to close out tonight's game, this afternoon's game. If I'm saying that, then yeah, there's no superstar on the team. But I think it can do some damage, even though.
Yeah, I got to agree there, too. And Isaiah's one of those type players that if he's on, he could at times be unstoppable. When he's off, he seems to not get it back. He is just off. And tonight was one of those games. You know, Isaiah, 4 of 18 from the field, 15 points, but really just couldn't get it together, 6 for 6 from the line. Majority of where his points came. And he's one of those guys. So in a situation where you're down 2 and the clock is running down, Isaiah's not having that type game. Who's your go-to guy?
Well, I think we saw it. Avery
Bradley,
the backcourt
yep.
pairing of Bradley and Smart were doing something. And, you know, Isaiah came in and did a couple of nice plays, and, you know, he got into the paint and he finished on a couple of plays, but he wasn't going to be able to carry the team down the stretch. But we did see major heads-up plays from Smart. He knocked down that three-pointer that was crucial,
mm-hmm.
and then you had Bradley go right up in the paint mm-hmm. and just stuff it in their mug. And I just think that's why I wouldn't have put Thomas in, not so much because he was, you know, not having a great shooting night, because he's going to do that. It happened the other night. And then he got hot, and he wound up finishing with a decent line. He finished the game strong. He has that capability. I understand why Stevens put him back in the game. But I just thought this was an afternoon where Smart and Bradley had a chance to really come together as leaders cohesively and provide everything that they were probably going to get today out of Thomas offensively, but not wind up with the defensive liabilities that they had to deal with. And all you got to do is look at Smart on Kawhi Leonard, you know, when the game was heading down the stretch and we were getting to that 6-4 minutes left zone, you know, it was really hard to stop. And then obviously Jared Sullinger, you know, I think that was a key part of the game, is the way LaMarcus Aldridge just, you know, worked them for the points. They were
mm-hmm.
you were at a critical juncture at that stage in the fourth quarter. And, you know, if Sullinger had taken that three, made it, then when he came back down before the next time, if they kind of slowed up and worked that offense instead of him taking another three, you know,
yep.
that game might have been a little bit tighter.
Yep, agreed, agreed. It's funny, too, we're talking about different lineups on the court against Toronto, obviously a completely different team, but you were talking all Evan Turner and Isaiah on the court. Tonight you say Marcus and Bradley. So that's the flexibility of a team as deep as this team. And you could imagine being the coach. I mean, there's just not enough data for a data-driven coach like Brad Stevens at this point.
Well, and just look at the way he managed this game. He tried to figure out who was going to be able to finish strong, who was playing for him. You know, Jonas Jerebko got kind of the screws put to him. He had a couple of calls that were just, you know, not
yeah.
fair. I mean, blatantly, you know, not right. But he was right to put Jerebko back in the game just because he had given him such an energy lift in the first half and really – got him going. And then, you know, I think another thing you look at is obviously Jared Sullinger earned his minutes. So those are some, you know, those are some scenarios where you know, Stevens has to look at who's providing the energy, who's executing, who's got the hot hand, especially in a game like this when they struggle to get themselves back above 30% field goal percentage. When you're struggling that bad, you're definitely going to look for guys that are going to be able to score points. I loved the adjustment in the second half, getting into the paint. The other thing I'll tell you, and this was, you know, came up on Friday night's game when the text barrage started between us. But, you know,
I know where you're
make
going,
no mistake. Yeah, Zeller did not come back in this game, and there was a lot of good reasons for it, and it wasn't just tonight. It trailed, well, if not all three games, it definitely started in the Toronto Raptors game. And, you know, it is too bad that Larry's not going to be able to join us because
I know
how much you love to set up this David Lee and Jared Sullinger situation, right? See, that's
right.
That's so perfect because this afternoon's game really plays to that dialogue very well. But a lot of the criticism Lee was getting, I just didn't understand why Zeller wasn't getting it. I understand the reason why Lee gets it is because he's a veteran, he's 32, and it's easy to point to age. But Zeller has been less effective, and he made Lee look even less effective because the two of them were a horrible pairing. When they started the second half of this game with Sullinger and Lee out on the court, I couldn't have been happier. It was a pairing. They'd never spent any time on the court together to that point this season. That's what I felt like needed to happen. And I like the Kelly Olynyk matching with Amir Johnson as well. It really was one of our better ones on Friday night. I was surprised not to see that in the second half really either. I thought Olynyk would come out, and we really just saw Sullinger stay in the game and hang in there with Amir Johnson. And I'm not sure I'm in love with Johnson and Sullinger out on the court together all the time because I think they both are more effective working in the paint. I like the pace and space, and I think Olynyk gives you that when he's paired with Amir Johnson. But, you know, you can't fault Stevens for finding the guys that were getting it done tonight, putting them out there. I mean, rebounding was a strength for some stretches in this game. I can't remember how many more shots we took than the Spurs, but, you know, when you've got that depth, you got to find the hot hands and you got to go to them.
Yeah, we took 15 more shots than the Spurs. And, you know, it's funny we talk about rebounding being a strength. I mean, last time I think we did a post-game show together, we were crying for the Celtics to rebound. They were constantly getting out-rebounded in the Big Three era. So it's an interesting transition to this new team, I guess this new generation of Celtics. I mean, you've been away from it for a while. Now getting yourself back in the mix. How much fun is it watching a team develop? I know we've had some frustrating years. 2 years ago in particular was really frustrating. That first half of last season, I think we really turned the corner when Rondo was shipped out, who, by the way, had a great game the other night against the Lakers. I know. But what's the difference? I mean, are you enjoying this, watching this team develop? Go ahead. You just take it, man.
Well, I mean, this is exactly why, you know, early in the turn of the century, I love being able to say
right.
Early in the turn of the century, we were essentially, you know, that's the reason why Celtic Stuff Live was created. The whole reason I got into this was because I liked having a lot of young players on the team to evaluate. I mean, think about how much we have to talk about. And it was unfortunate at the time, nobody wanted to talk about developing players. You couldn't call into a talk show and get anybody to even, you know, oh, yeah, I want to call in and I want to talk about the Celtics. I love Al Jefferson. You know,
right.
And then you sit on hold for an hour and a half until you finally gave up. And, you know, that's why we created the show. So there's an enormous amount of appeal for me in watching this team develop. And, you know, I have a great interest in watching a young coach as well. I mean, when Doc Rivers came, we already knew he had won Coach of the Year. You know, he'd turned around a franchise. We knew what he was here for. Great guy, you know, just great for the city, great for the organization, great for the media as well. Great for the media.
Really?
When we finally got into the locker room, you know, a lot of times he got criticism or criticized because he was so friendly with the media that people said that the media wouldn't take it, you know, hard on him, that he got breaks all the time for being great with the media. But I think another piece of that is that Doc was always very open with the media about what he was thinking. I mean, yeah, there were certain things he couldn't say, but But for the most part, he was very open with the media with why he made his decision. So even if you disagreed with him, you got a reason why. It's very hard to argue with somebody who's even willing to admit that they might be wrong from time to time, or they just explain what their thinking was, you know, and they're not arguing with you about whether or not it was right. So did Doc make, you know, coaching decisions that weren't always, you know, good? And yeah, absolutely. And did he deserve criticism at times? Hey, no coach is perfect. Even Greg Popovich deserves criticism. So, you know, that's going to happen. But I'll just tell you, it's great because we have a lot of different players to look at. They're not going to be consistent. So we get to have a lot of fun on shows like this. And, you know, while today might have been an I told you so with Sullinger and Lee for Larry, you know, a week from now,
you know,
I could go back the other way again.
You know that's why he bailed tonight. This man will never get egg on his face. You know that all of a sudden his power went out. Come on, Larry. The Celtics Nation has been dying to get their claws on his face for picking on Sullinger all offseason and really just pretending David Lee didn't even exist throughout majority of the offseason. And here tonight, we have you on air. I was going to put you two head-to-head on this. He bailed. He bailed
well,
on
I'll it. Tell you. It wouldn't have been completely head-to-head because I'm not even 100% pro-Sullinger. As a matter of fact, I think I kind of just teased that and said I'm not sure that he's the guy I would have put on the floor to close out the game. And I mean that. Despite the fact that he had a very positive performance, I want to see him on the floor with Lee. I want to see him on the floor early in the game. I want to see him with that starting unit coming out because he does have emotion and energy, and I think that's what it needs. That's what this team needs when they come out of the gate. And I want him to use his fouls. And, you know, Larry's – you know, and not only Larry, but all the other people that have kind of criticized, you know, Sullinger and his conditioning and et cetera, you know, I think they might be correct to a point, but we don't really know. And what I mean by that is until Sully plays significant minutes, I don't even – he's not going to be a starter that starts the game and ends the game as a budding superstar player until he can handle 38 minutes a night. And I don't really care about how much pounds he has on his body. What I care about is how strong can he play? Not only physically strong, but, you know, that toll is a mental toll as well. And when he jacked that three, I think that was a mental lapse. So I think there's some things like that that he's still – there's reasons to criticize Sullinger as well. But I actually like his weight. And it's another reason why, you know, I like him in the starting lineup early on is, you know, you even look at Valanciunas, how I just thought he impacted the game way more than the box score showed the other night. And it took him too long to get Sullinger into that game even because David Lee and Zeller were not able whatsoever to control that paint. And they're not making baskets either. But the thing that Lee gives you that Zeller is not giving you right now is rebounds. Even when David Lee goes 1-for-7 like he did tonight, he's still giving you 8 rebounds.
And he's
moving the ball. And Zeller's, that's really quietly going to emerge as a what the heck happened. Because he is, again, he's missing from the second half of this game. He completely fell out of the rotation in favor of Sullinger. It's the second game where we've seen it. What is going on with him? Because he's a great team defender. You know, he's been able to generate easy offense in the past. But he's not even averaging a full rebound per game. Not even one rebound per game.
Oh, I know. A donut.
To this point in the
Friday
season.
Night. Yeah. What, how many rebounds did he have tonight?
One. In limited minutes, you know.
In limited minutes, be fair. 6 minutes.
And I almost think, you know what, just to add one other thing, I almost think with this deep of a front court rotation and as much as Brad is playing with it, we almost can't even evaluate these guys on a per game. We have to do it on a per 36 minutes because none of them are getting any kind of substantial or consistent playing time. And, you know, they're going to have nights like this one where, you know, Zeller comes in, doesn't play much, and, you know, it'll just kill his per game stats. But make no mistake, he's got enough minutes to average at least a single rebound a game.
A rebound, come on. And I'll tell you, I thought Stevens was going to make the lineup change. I didn't know necessarily Sullinger Lee, but I thought Tyler was probably going to be out of the starting lineup today. I like that Brad Stevens is willing to pull the trigger on a starting role for somebody. He waited till the second half. Now I'm really interested to see Wednesday against Indiana. It's too early in the show to really look ahead, but to see where Tyler Zeller is, if he's in that starting lineup.
Well, Brad wants to go with four. He said so. Here we were, you know, I think we were reading articles, not even a game into the season, you know, just after the first game, and was already saying, well, I might have to expand it to five. But I think, you know, really what he's going to want to do is keep that at four. And I really honestly feel like Lee and Sully, you know, that matchup that we finally saw, or that pairing that we finally saw to start the second half, I think that's the one. And I think Olynyk and Johnson work well together. You know, Olynyk missed a couple of threes, but who didn't on this team today?
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, they're not missing wildly. I mean, Sullinger had a couple of shots that didn't touch the rim. You know, that one, like, fadeaway hook crazy shot that was at least 3 feet drop in front of the rim, air ball.
It was like a Rodman free throw. It was a Rodman free throw.
It was horrendous. See, that's where people want to talk about Sullinger's conditioning, but I just want to talk about his brain. Because I think, you know, he gets excited and he loses control, but then there's these other moments when it's like he steps up into a shot and there's no doubt in his mind it's going in. He has elements of what Marcus Smart has in him, but he doesn't have the ability to become what Marcus Smart is clearly going to become. This game told me everything I needed to know about where Marcus Smart is headed in his career. I think this is going to be one of those games of foreboding, maybe not foreboding, because that means something that could bring in negativity, but this is going to be very telling, or it's going to be, you know, one of those games where you kind of think back, you know, and it's maybe we're two-thirds of the way through the season, and we say, remember when he showed this poise against the, you know, against the Spurs in their only matchup of the season? This is what, you know, we saw a glimpse of this. And truthfully, the reason we didn't see more down the stretch, in my honest opinion, is because Thomas went back out into the game. But until Marcus Smart continues to utilize that floater in the lane and create some space and consistently knock down the three-pointer, this is not going to be his team in the fourth quarter, because we just can't take a step back away from Thomas. We the team needs him. They just need him right now. But they only need him so long as Marcus Smart doesn't continue to improve.
Justin, I could say it's honestly like riding a bike, man. It's like you were never gone.
I still think about this stuff all the time.
Well, you could clearly tell. You just went around the entire team, top to bottom, 48 minutes. You did it all in about 10 minutes, man. He figured it all out for us. I think at this point, we could start going to the call lines, and we'll intermittently take calls throughout the show. And I'll tell you, the call lines are packed, and we see you all. Don't go anywhere. We're going to take them in order. We're going to start with – now, this guy, you want to talk about going around the world and being all over the place, Justin. You got to get Nick Cicento in here. You've probably heard him on the post-game show before. He can go, so maybe we'll let him rant for a minute and then kind of reel him in. Nick, welcome.
Nick the caller from the other night in Florida.
Are you in Florida
me.
Or Peru right now? That's you. There you go. It's him.
I take offense to that. I don't think I'm all over the place. I just think I try to cover what I observe in as little time as possible. That's about how
you,
I would describe
only,
my style.
You should only take offense to it because I got that all over the place description through Calvin, who constantly says this about me.
Oh, yeah, well, that's because Calvin doesn't like me. So
no, he likes you. Are you kidding me?
Well, we have our disagreements on there. I like Calvin, too, but, you know, it's one of those on-air rivalries, so we play off of each other, I guess, is the way that it kind of works.
All right, Nick, you got a minute. Go ahead and break down the entire game in 60 seconds. I know you could do it.
Now you put me on the spot. I can't really do that. But what I would like to do is discuss the point that is Justin, I believe the gentleman's name is Justin, made about going with Thomas over Smart down in the fourth quarter, down the line in the fourth quarter. And I think the two main things are Thomas's ability to distribute the ball. I think he's still a little bit better. I mean, obviously he's looking to score first, but he, you know, with his ability to draw the defenders in, he can find the open man, kick out, you know, do that thing. And also his ability to draw fouls. Marcus Smart doesn't draw fouls the way Isaiah Thomas does, and he doesn't make his foul shots the way that Isaiah Thomas makes his foul shots.
Stop right there for one second because I want Justin to react, and I think pretty much you proved his point almost. Until Marcus can develop those aspects of his game, it will always be the Isaiah Thomas show. Justin?
Yeah, it's got to be. It has to be. And, you know, the other thing is, while you see a glimpse of him being able to take over the game, you don't necessarily want to put that pressure on a player night in and night out, especially early in the season, as you're trying to find the identity. And I don't think Marcus necessarily wants to take over the game either. I think it's important for him to be, you know, distributor. And I also think the other reason is because Stevens relies heavily on him to play defense, and he could burn out fast and furious in a 5 or 6. I mean, I know he's got a high motor, but if they put him up against, you know, the most difficult defensive matchup for them, you know, for the opposing team in either of the first 3 positions, if he's running hard on defense, he's going to have to give it up somewhere. And so I think, you know, what they're looking at is, well, we got a little bit of a luxury here. But, you know, we got to give it to the Spurs in this game, because part of the reason Thomas wasn't successful is that they defended the pick and roll. I mean, he got forced to go into the paint.
Yep.
He could not create any plays. And that's what you get from a Greg Popovich coach team, right? Everything that we would hope to see in regards to pick and roll, and especially that's the reason that Thomas is out there down the stretch, is because that's the best way to close out a game is in the pick and roll game. Just nice, simple execution. Keep that ball moving. Try to get as close to the paint as you can. That got shut down. And I don't. Smart's not ready to run that pick and roll. And I think that's another thing that's going to have to more further develop for Smart to be able to take over the team down the stretch. I think Isaiah Thomas has got a place in the fourth quarter to close out games for, you know, at least the first half to two-thirds of this season, if not, you know, this season and into next.
Next point, Nick. What's your next point?
Yeah, speaking of the pick and roll, and I'm glad that that was brought up, is probably one of the reasons why I don't think that Zeller is doing so well. I think that obviously his game has declined a little bit, but the explanation for that decline may be the people that he's playing with. I just don't think that when you start Avery Bradley and Marcus Smart, because we all just agreed Marcus Smart isn't, you know, quite at that level yet to be able to run the point, he's starting with Avery Bradley, who is the small guard, you know, technically, and Marcus Smart, who is supposedly the point guard, and then we moved Crowder into the starting lineup in favor, you know, I mean, and moved Evan Turner out, and Evan Turner was, up until this season, basically the primary ball handler, and when you have that starting lineup of Lee, Crowder, Tyler Zeller with Avery Bradley and Marcus Smart in the backcourt, there's nobody really to play with to play the pick and roll game with Tyler Zeller, which is basically his strength as an offensive player. And then when you combine him with David Lee, I don't think either one of them are great man defenders. I think Tyler Zeller, you know, decent team defender, not a great man defender. Neither one of them plays to each other's strengths. I think, you know, Tyler Zeller being a pick and roll guy, David Lee being a guy that can play in the paint, there's just not the same spacing you get. And I think that's why you saw maybe the success with Amir Johnson and Kelly Olynyk, is because Amir Johnson plays primarily in the paint and Kelly Olynyk doesn't. And maybe with David Lee and Sully, the combination there, Sully, you know, more prone to take those shots. He spreads it out a little bit more than, and is honestly a little bit better at hitting those shots than, you know, maybe Tyler Zeller would be. So those combinations just aren't there. In addition, I just don't see who runs the offense yet. I think if you're going to have Crowder coming out, you know, Crowder starting and putting Turner on the bench, which I completely support. I'm a big Turner guy, but Turner has not justified in any way, shape, or form the right to have a starter's job. But if you're going to put Crowder in there, you kind of need to have Isaiah Thomas as the guard opposite of Marcus Smart to run the offense, to kind of be able to penetrate, because there's nobody else on that, you know, starting lineup that's penetrating from, you know, the perimeter. Isaiah Thomas can get in there. Evan Turner can get in when he's on, when he's, you know, does his thing. He can make moves and get into the basket. But when Evan Turner's out, Crowder's in there, there's nobody creating shots other than Marcus Smart for himself, and Avery Bradley doesn't really create great shots for himself either. I don't think he needs to be set
and
up.
Nick, keep in mind that as much as Evan Turner gets into the paint, he's not a great finisher. You know, he had that botch dunk the other night.
Definitely.
You know, he had a couple that roll. I mean, and he's got the ups. What is almost, and I can see where the you know, fans in Philly got frustrated with him, because it's so obvious he has so much talent, both physically and diverse talent skills. But literally, I think if Evan Turner could just finish strong, you know, go and throw it down. If he just had, and I'm serious, like, let's weigh it out. Maybe 3 more ounces of just attitude or aggression, and those balls. And no, I don't think it's a brains thing.
Oh,
because,
I think he did. Oh. Go ahead.
But not on finishing shots. Do I think there's issues in terms of, like, he shouldn't? Yeah, he shouldn't be a point guard. But, you know, he's got the ball in his hands and he'll create. But, you know, I do agree with the point that they need to get into that paint more. You know, not just in pick and roll, but cutters, backdoor. Like, I remember Rondo used to work with Avery Bradley on those backdoor cuts all the time. And, you know, they could recreate some of that magic, because for a guy his height, Avery Bradley does finish strong, which is why it's so mind-numbing to me when, you know, you've got all those extra inches with Evan Turner, but he doesn't have the ability to finish. You know, when you look at the way Avery Bradley went and threw that one down when the game was, you know, getting close and they were trying to claw their way back in it, you know, Evan Turner, he's not going to finish like that. He just doesn't. And if he did, then, you know, he might be more reliable for us that way.
Nick, thanks for calling in, man. Hang tight, though. It's going to be a great show. Stay on the call lines.
Appreciate it.
Thanks, man. That's Nick from Florida, Peru, and wherever he is at the moment, I think in Florida. Justin, Nick always has a good take. He loves Evan Turner.
Dude, I like Evan Turner. I just wish Evan Turner was like, you know, I wish he had a beast mode switch or something. It just, he needs to turn it on just a little bit. There's just, you know, he needs to, let me put it this way. If I'm getting in a fight, and I don't want to, but I got to have somebody standing next to me, I'm going to take anybody else on the Celtics over Evan Turner, right? He just needs to have that little extra fire, and I'll deal with the headaches. I mean, look, there's a lot of guys that don't make, you know, great decisions all the time. And keep in mind, last season he wasn't put into the best role. Like, it helped to have him as a ball handler, but he's not meant to be the ball handler.
Correct. No question about it. I mean, that's usually, even with from the shooting aspect, I understand what you're saying around finishing around the rim. But from the shooting aspect, it seems like when he's not thinking too much, he hits shots. I mean, he hit a couple buzzer beaters last year, some really tough game-winning shots. And when he's given the time to think about it, I guess similar to what you're saying about Sully, it's Brick City. It's something about Avery. And nobody's really talking about. I'll tell you what, everybody wants to talk about Sully's conditioning. I think Avery has come into this season in exceptional shape, and he's regained that vertical leap. I mean, he is jumping higher on his jump shot. You saw him climb, Tommy said it, climb the ladder today with that monster dunk. Talk about Avery a little bit, and what we always talk about him from a defensive standpoint. His offense has improved incredibly.
Yeah, he's really an underrated talent in the league. And if Brad is smart, he's going to keep trying to give him the keys to be their guy down the clutch. I mean, if you really think about it, he did get relegated to trying to be like the Ray Allen of the team and just hit the three-pointer, you know, especially he's got that nice corner three.
Yep.
But he has more to him. He has a lot more to him. We've seen it with that fire. He's got a nice – we've heard a lot of – well, I've read a lot of articles, and we've heard people talk about how Marcus Smart is learning to change speeds, right, so that he's got more tempo instead of just, you know, being like Terry Rozier where it's just 0 to 60 and he stays at 60 till he hits the wall, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, we're seeing that also from Bradley. You know, he had those ups early in his career, but it was more of a straight line. If you really watch him work his way into the paint, he's got little stutter steps. He's got change of pace moves that are going to help him, you know, cross up. He's even got his crossover, I think, has improved a little bit. So he can kind of move left to right as he's trying to break down the defense and get into the paint. They should be encouraging that. They should have him continue to develop that, get him more opportunities. Because the truth is, Nick's point was 100% on the money, which is this team needs to get in the paint. And when they're not knocking down shots, and that's where they're trying to find their sort of enthusiasm and confidence on offense, they stay outside and continue to jack threes or you know, one or two step in from the three-point line, deep twos. Those are killing them. I'd rather see him go into the paint and even have an Evan Turner moment than to just sit out there and just watch it all break down. Because it's great when you can pass the ball around the horn, but if nobody's going to go into the paint, the defense doesn't have to adjust. And, you know, every time the ball gets to the next person, there's still nobody open. Defense rotates way too easy because they're not rotating in and out. They're just rotating along the perimeter.
That seems to be a lot of the Stevens system, though. I mean, they do camp out around the three-point line. And I get last year it was very similar. You can't, for me, you know, I sound like Barkley, living and dying with the three, but in similar to last year, this isn't a really good three-point shooting team. I mean, tonight, how many threes did they chuck up? They were 6 for 29. I think they were similar stat on versus Toronto. And it frustrates the hell out of me. The spacing is great. We both talked about that in the third and fourth quarter. But if you don't have the three-point shooters, why do we continually go to – explain that to me.
Well, the deal is that, like you said, is the way that the offense sets up. So they're spread out along the perimeter, so there's supposed to be room inside. But part of the reason that the three-point shooting isn't good is, A, it's early in the season, and a lot of these guys haven't found their groove. It's not going to continue. But the second reason is because if they don't go inside, they're almost always contested. I mean, yes, they missed a bunch of way open looks today, and that'll come in time. These guys are basketball players, and, you know, some are better shooters than others, but, you know, you're not going to miss that many wide open looks over the course of the season. The law of averages is going to fix some of that. But what you are seeing, I think, is when they over-rely on it, then the ones that they're taking are more likely to be contested. They're feeling more pressure out on the perimeter, and it becomes a major issue. And, you know, you thought I covered every single topic possible, you know, in the first 10 minutes, but there's another one, which is how about getting Amir Johnson more involved? Because when they are spaced out on the perimeter, they can make a long pass into him, and they did it a couple of times. And he had a couple of those nice hooks from maybe 5 feet out.
5 feet, yep.
And he's got the ability to do it. He needs to be more involved. I think Tommy even called for it during the broadcast. He needs to get more involved because that's my point. The defense doesn't have to shift in and out because they never go in. So if they do those things, then he can kick it back out to somebody who is going to be open because the defense just collapsed on him. And as guys take more and more good open looks, more good open shots in the spot that they want to be in. Not a forced, oh, this is where the defense is going to give us the open three, but this is where I like to get the ball. This is where I put up 100 shots before the game. That spot on the floor, when Amir Johnson can just do a nice tap pass back out and they can take that, more of them will fall.
And that's basketball 101. It really is. Pound it in the paint to open the perimeter or vice versa. And you're absolutely right. I couldn't agree more with that assessment. And you could see it, too, as far as Amir goes. That 5 foot, 5-6 foot range, that baby hook is really pretty. You get 1 or 2 feet more out, you could see he's already outside of his range for that type move. And you saw it late in the game where they got it to him and he clonked one. But for the most part, yeah, and it's to say, Sully is great around the basket. He's got great hands. He's got great feet. And, again, he's camped out around the perimeter.
And he can create. See, what's great about Sully, and again, if he loses weight, you know, it's probably, you know, the last place it'll come off is his hips and his butt, right?
His ass,
that's the
right.
The world works, but that is a huge advantage for him, which is why I say, I'm not worried about weight. That's such a symbol of our society, right? Everybody's all focused on the scale and the pounds. I don't care about that. If his conditioning is good enough. And then his mind comes along where he's deserving of playing 35 minutes a game, 36 minutes a game, and he's playing at a point where he's established himself. I don't care if he looks – I don't even care if he gets bigger. As long as he physically can play both ends of the court, he's out there, he's mentally able to take it. If he has that, I don't care because I think that wide load – is an advantage for him. The amount of space, to your point, that he can create in the paint to get a shot off, you know, we looked at height, and he's not necessarily ideal height for that position. But he's getting an extra 2 inches just because of the way that he can back a player down and the way he can hold position or establish position with that lower body weight. I mean, I think that's an asset for him. So So, again, as long as he can get up and down the floor, I'm okay with it.
FanDuel toll-free call lines are open. They are packed. 347-215-7771. FanDuel is paying out over $75 million a week this football season. You could get involved for just about a buck. Anyone can play. Go to FanDuel.com. Use the CLNS radio promo code Celtics for free play. Let's go to our next caller. It's an old friend, Justin. The minute you hear the voice, you're going to know who it is. So we're going to go to Farmington. 207, you're live.
Oh, I know who it is. Not there anymore. I am not in Farmington anymore.
That's all right. No, we're still going to say you are, Mad Dog.
Okay, all right. Well, Justin, just a brief thing, for all the other callers out there that don't know, or all the other listeners that do not know, Justin, we go back a long way for the Celtic Stuff Live post-game shows. Obviously, the most memorable times with you and John were during the 2010 playoff run. Sorry about that. But I have some family here.
Mad Dog, get in a quiet spot, Mad Dog. Come on.
Okay, I'm sorry. It's just my idiot uncle. That's all. Anyway, I got to get back on track now. But yeah, and also Justin, you were part of the best sports documentary of all time.
Ever.
And I love watching it too. And I watched it with one of my buddies up in Maine who lived in Southern Maine for a long time. And it was right after the Pistons game. You stopped at the rest stop in Kennebunk.
And he
knew exactly where that was. But I always get fired up when you go on after game four and you say book it, baby.
Book it, baby. Yeah.
Number 17. But anyway, you and John did a fantastic job,
just so you know, John was always the brains of that operation. You know, I mean, I was there to facilitate and I have opinions and whatnot. And, you know, we're going to have to get back on a show together again at some point.
No
because
question.
The Rondo debate, you know, needs to be revived. I mean, that was always a big one. And did you hate Rondo? You hate Rondo. I was like, I don't hate Rondo. Just not sure I'm in love with Rondo. But,
I hated
you know,
Rondo. I'm okay with saying it. You know, Justin, every time I hear he's in Parts Unknown, I think of John Duke because he would always say Justin Pullman from Parts Unknown when you were calling in from on the road.
Oh, yeah. I was doing – I'll tell you, when I first moved to Pennsylvania, I was driving 10 and a half hours back to Maine every 3 weeks. Now I'm flying. And it was a long ride, but I was always driving back on Sundays. So every, 3 weeks, I would literally be calling from Parts Unknown to John and even myself, you know, depending on if I was in New York or, you know, somewhere in Connecticut on the drive. But, you know, definitely a long ride. But I do remember that. It was kind of like, yeah, Justin's somewhere out there.
He's somewhere.
He's traveling. Parts Unknown. Yep.
Parts Unknown. Mad Dog, what else you got, buddy?
Okay, well, I just wanted to just sort of give it, and I'm so happy to talk with you again, Justin. Obviously, but I just wanted to you were talking a little bit before, and today it simply came down to the game that the Celtics shot less than 30% in the first half. We're the team to beat. They have to bring their A game to beat. So that was basically what the game was today. They just couldn't make shit shots in the first half, and it killed them. And you can't battle back against a team like that and expect to win. But you mentioned something about what this team's ceiling is, and I asked this on the post-game show on Wednesday. in that you say that you think that this team could make it to the conference finals. I don't know with how this roster is constructed, and I understand that we love Avery Bradley and Marcus Smart. Very good players. I'm not saying that they're bad players, but very good players. But when you get into a playoff situation where you have to go up against a team like Chicago or a team like Cleveland or a team like that, I'm just using them as some examples of teams out there that this team is not going to be able to beat in a 7-game series. I said the other night, I think that they have a possibility at their peak of winning between 45 and 48 games and winning a round. And that would mean that they win a round against a team that, since it's such a weak Eastern Conference, but as far as them making it to the conference finals and be competitive in the conference finals, with how this roster is constituted, to be able to compete with a healthy Miami, a Chicago, a Cleveland, even in Atlanta, and you could throw Washington in there with their backcourt. That's a very tough thing to imagine them making it that far in a playoff setting, because we all know in the playoffs stars win in the playoffs. And
it's a good question, man.
And that's a question that I want to leave you guys with. Again, great show. And just as a little side note, Nick. Your twin brother is on tonight at 10 o'clock on Spike TV, a brand new episode of Bar Rescue. I just want to throw that out there for you, Nick. All right, guys, peace out.
Later, Mad Dog. Hasn't changed a bit, right, Justin? It hasn't changed a bit.
Not
he brings up a point. He brings up a point we've already kind of tackled, which is the whole star driven team, especially in the playoffs. Let's get back to that question.
Well,
I think. Hang on 1 second. Go ahead. Give your reaction.
I think he nailed it with about 44 wins. I think he's on the money. That's what I picked. I think he said 44, 45. You know, I think this team's positioned to win 44. It really depends on playoff seeding to answer his question more than anything. And all those teams he mentioned are definitely tough competitors, but we don't know what's going to happen in the season. You know, during the season, you know, look what happened to Derrick Rose a few years ago. Look at what happened to Rondo a few years ago.
Right.
Injuries always play a factor. It's a long season. At the end of the day, if all these teams are 100% healthy headed to the postseason, and Celtics finish with 44 wins, and they're, you know, playing one of the top, you know, three teams in the league in the first, you know, round of the playoffs, it's a lot tougher. If they can get themselves positioned, you know, up into that four or five slot, then they've got a much better chance at going around, maybe two rounds. But, it really comes down to, can they execute? Can they close games out? Can they play strong in the fourth quarter? Can they get that win tally up? Because the higher it goes, the better their chances are of getting, you know, that far. And the only thing I'll say is, you know, to a conversation you and I had the other day on the phone, Nick, which is the fact that look at how they played Cleveland. Look at the compliment that they got from LeBron.
Yep,
and
LeBron,
now this team's
yep.
a year older in the same system, and they've added a piece like Amir Johnson. Do I think they could beat Cleveland in the first round? Absolutely not. No way. I don't think that. I'm not saying that. I'm saying if they position their seed up high enough that they don't have to play Cleveland until that conference final, that it's not totally out of the question to say that, you know, if the stars align, that this team, you know, could end up being very strong, getting out a round or two. Definitely the first round they have the capacity to get out of. But getting to the conference finals might be tough.
Might be tough. But with that, moving right along here, Justin, we have the Grandstand Celtics Locker Room Report, powered by the Grandstand apps, sports highlights from fans in the stands. On the new sports app Grandstand, you can share your own Celtics highlights and other teams and watch other fans' videos straight from the crowd at TD Garden. Download the Grandstand app in the iTunes Grand Store or go to grandstand.me. Now, in the iTunes Grand Store, iTunes App Store, download the app, but also give them a rating and review. Let them know you heard about them here on CLNS Radio Celtics postgame show. So now we'll go to Jared Weiss for the Grandstand app locker room report. Jay Weiss, you're on the line with Pullen and Nick Gelso.
Can't believe I'm on with Pullen. This is a dream come true for me.
I'll tell you a really quick story here.
You know not to do that.
All right, so really quick story here. I've been listening. I think I started listening to Celtic Stuff Live when I was like 12 or 13 years old. And the last episode I remember listening to was, I was with my dad. We were on a business trip in Charlotte, and we had to drive all the way up in the mountains to Asheville, North Carolina. And we were like, what the hell are we going to do? It's such a long drive. It's going to be miserable, terrible weather. And what we did is we listened to, I think it was the final episode of Celtic Stuff Live. And it was such an emotional bonding experience of father and son to say goodbye to an institution.
This is brutal.
to be stuck in driving through the mountains of North Carolina where there was absolutely no radio reception anywhere. And to think that we had it on my old iPhone with the cracked screen that we were able to listen to the last
they
episode.
They had iPhones back
live.
Then? Wait a minute.
That was a
they
special moment.
They had iPhones back then, Justin, when you were on the air? Wasn't it like the Envy?
You know,
or the Crazer?
About that is if you do watch the movie, you'll see, like, I have one of those old, like, cell phone USB things.
Yeah.
And my computer, it's like, now you can just do that. You know, by connecting to
isn't
your
that
phone. So.
Isn't that, you were like carrying equipment around.
Oh, yeah. No, yeah, I had a lot. A lot has been automated. I mean, Blog Talk Radio wasn't even an option when we first got started. I had all these different mixing boards and computers and cords and cables. And it was a lot of work. But, boy, you know, Jared, you make me feel old. You know, the fact that anybody, you know, listened to me talk when they were – you know, prepubescent years is just, it's really crazy. I was telling my wife the other day, I was like, you know, when people say they grew up listening to Celtic Stuff Live, it's flattering, but it's also, you know, it's one of those gauges in your life. You're like, oh my God. And I just turned 40 in April, so it's a nice, you know, it's a nice start. Like, you've been around, son.
Yay. Well, you know, we got Jared Weiss on the line now. As you know, he does the Garden Report, got your attention the other day, and Friday, I think Jimmy Toscano called you a legend. So enough kissing your ass, Justin. Let's go to Jared now. Jared, break down the game. What happened after the game? Tell us all the key points.
Well, during the game, I think we saw one of the worst halves of Celtics basketball, and really in Spurs basketball in a while now. I know Isaiah Thomas, even like through the third quarter, was having the worst game of his career with the Celtics. He had his lowest shooting percentage of his career, although he hit a couple more shots in the end. But I think he might have finished with his worst shooting performance ever with the Celtics. He went 4 for 18, 22% from the field. Is pretty terrible. I mean, this team needs shooting badly. You know, they took 29 threes. That's 10 more than the Spurs, and the Spurs are a pretty major three-point shooting team. You know, the Spurs couldn't hit their threes tonight either, and both teams shot poorly. But the Spurs were just so good at the end of the game, whether it was Kawhi Leonard, who was nailing every single shot he took, whether it was a floater or a pull-up from 20 feet out. Aldridge was just absolutely on fire in the fourth quarter there, and he finished with was a 24 and 15 or so. It was a absolute nightmare of a game for the Celtics up until the last 5.5 minutes. And the fact that they could at least get it together at the end was nice, and it was definitely a good sign. But the team looks lost out there because they can't hit their threes. And Stevens was kind of pretty clear about it today that he does expect the law of averages to kick in and the threes to fall, and they are getting their open looks, and they're just not hitting them right now. But it's not like he thinks that the system needs to be scrubbed. I mean, he's pretty aware that they're only three games in, and they don't need a major overhaul, but if the threes aren't going to fall, then they need to definitely tinker with the lineup more than they did tonight. And while not playing Zeller at all for the second half and giving Jonas Rebko a bunch of time at the three kind of helped a little bit, it still isn't finding an actually feasible answer for them.
What's interesting, Jared, about this Spurs team is the way that they're just making such a smooth handoff to the younger players, you know, like you mentioned, Kawhi Leonard and LaMarcus Aldridge, really both of them were in charge of this game down the stretch. And,
yeah.
But Manu Ginobili has the ability to just take over the game in little spurts. It was like they were hanging in that 8 to 12, 14-point deficit range,
And every time the Celtics got it pushed to, like, 8 up until that last final stretch, every time they got pushed up to, like, 8, one of the senior members, and, you know, today it was Ginobili, was able to just come in and do a couple of things and real methodical, shows his experience, and just would keep this game out of arm's reach. Did you feel that when you were watching the game and kind of hear that from the players afterwards, or did they feel much more likely this game was within reach?
No, I'll tell you, Manu is probably one of my 5 favorite basketball players of all time. The impact that he has on the game comes from he has a more diverse game than just about anyone else has ever played. And it's just incredible to see the way that is he 36 now or 37? He's pretty high up there at this point. And he paces himself throughout the game, and then he just attacks at the right moment. And we saw tonight, he took over in like a point forward role for a lot of that mid-fourth quarter where the Celtics were starting. The Celtics had made their run, and the Spurs started to kind of open the divide a little bit more. It was really – you got to give credit to Manu. He was whipping – he actually whipped a few passes to Aldridge, where Aldridge almost dropped the pass because he wasn't ready for it. And Manu's ability to throw a quick pass off of a half dribble is incredible. Obviously, the Spurs are a team that respects their opponent and is aware of the situation, so they weren't really – they didn't, like, coast thinking that they had an easy win here. But, you know, one thing that really struck me was it seemed like Aldridge was kind of – getting the ball within the flow of the offense and on offensive rebound opportunities and things like that throughout most of the game. But then at around the 5-minute mark or so, when the Celtics are making a pretty big run, they ran 3 plays in a row where they gave Aldridge a post up on the left baseline on Solinger, and he hit turnaround jumpers on all 3 of them. And that was kind of the moment that really kind of opened the game back up. And then Kawhi Leonard hit a big shot, I think a couple possessions later, to really ice the game. And I asked Aldridge about whether or not he was actually ran post-up plays or if that's just the opportunity presented itself. And he said that all 3 of those plays were deliberately ran so that he could get the post-up, and that Tony Parker was the one calling those 2 plays. And so that he said that they're giving him freedom. They've given him freedom since day one. And the trick with him has been trying to figure out how to use his freedom and still stay in the whole realm of the offense.
Yeah. The mentorship in that organization is incredible. So
it is.
It seems like one of the major themes of the Celtics is figuring out this front court rotation, the pairings. You know, Stevens continues to experiment with it. We talked about it a little bit before you came on, but Tyler Zeller comes in. He plays 6 minutes. He gets lifted in, you know, with the first substitution, and he never comes back, never even sees the floor in the second half. Did you get a chance to talk to Zeller? Is he available after the game? You know, any commentary about kind of how he fell right out of this rotation in the last 2 games?
Well, so I did the Spurs locker room, so I didn't get to talk to Zeller, but I don't think he spoke after the game. But Stevens was asked about it, and he just kind of simply said he kind of took the middle of the road answer, just saying, "Well, that's just kind of how it played out tonight. It wasn't specific to keep Zeller out of the game." But that it was just a matter of that the matchups the rest of the night didn't really call for it. And that happened in the last game with, I can't remember if it was Zeller, or I think it was David Lee. David Lee played a short rotation early in the game, and then he had a very short one in the 3rd quarter and never came back in the game. And frankly, David Lee, he didn't really even play a ton tonight. He played 20 minutes, went 1-for-7 from the field. And once he started to really shoot the ball poorly, they kind of took him out of the game for most of the second half. So I think Stevens is trying to play the guys based on just how the flow of the game goes. And he's not trying to, like, specifically bench Zeller or bench Lee. It's just a matter of how the matchup works out. And that's been having Johnson and Solinger playing most of the second half.
Yeah, Lee and Zeller have struggled as a pairing together, you know, but let's go to another topic that we kind of fleshed out earlier, which is Smart and Bradley, because it seemed to me that especially when they were truly climbing back into this game, the 2 of them showed not only aggressiveness, but a little bit of chemistry, like they're getting comfortable with each other. That's when the game really started to get into the paint for the Celtics. Now, Stevens elects to bring Thomas back into the game, and we all know why, you know, he's a great facilitator. But I felt like possibly it broke up some of the magic that we were seeing with Smart and Bradley and the way that they were kind of forcing the game into the paint and changing the pace and almost taking control of it. And we know Thomas is having a rough night anyway, but Stevens has said before he's going to play through that.
So I understand why he went back in, but I thought I'd get your thoughts as well, because it kind of took the ball out of Smart's hands, and I thought he and Bradley were maybe beginning to try to, you know, really make a dent in this game and form some chemistry that maybe they could be out there to close out games.
I mean, right now, Isaiah Thomas is the only guy really making the offense go, so they kind of are forced to have him out there, but they need Swart and Bradley's defense, so they're having the issue where they're going with three guards out there, and that can be a big problem defensively. I know Smart covered Kawhi, and he was able to keep up with Kawhi really well, but even people that can keep up with Kawhi eventually lose him, and eventually Kawhi gets that offensive rebound or forces that turnover or he gets that backdoor cut so that he gets the open shot. So that lineup can be feasible for now, but none of them are really hitting their shots. I mean, Isaiah was good in the first two games. It was pretty awful tonight. I mean, a lot of it was that Isaiah was running like pick and rolls, and they would triple team him and trap him in the high post, and he would have to try to find his way out of it. And he found his way out of it about, I'd say, you know, 50-50. He only had two turnovers, so that wasn't bad. But they need 3-point shooters. Marcus Smart and Avery Bradley can shoot the three ball, but it hasn't been going down for them so far. So the three-guard lineup is plausible against most teams so far. You know, if they face a team like Memphis or Indiana, they might – actually, Indiana would make sense now with their new rotation. But there's not a lot of teams where they're going to – like the three-guard lineup won't work for them just because of Bradley and Smart's intensity on defense.
Yeah, it's just, like you said, it's tough because it forces Crowder to the bench. And, you know, when they need stops, it makes it that much harder for them to get stops even when they do create offense. So that's something that's going to have to work itself out. It makes sense to have Thomas out there, but it junks things up in the backcourt, there's no doubt.
And Jared, they're putting the onus on Marcus Smart. I'm sorry, Dick, I'll let you close me on a sec, but just to be clear, they're putting the onus clearly on Marcus Smart to fill that role that Jay Crowder would be filling. Smart is guarding threes. He's being the main defensive nuisance guy, and that's a tall task for a guy that's only about 6'2".
Jared, quickly, CLNS Radio's YouTube channel, Best of AV Locker Room Coverage from TD Garden and the Home of the Garden Report, youtube.com/CLNS Radio. Jared, what do you have planned for Celtics Nation later tonight and uploading tomorrow morning?
We're going to have Kevin O'Connor from Celtics Blog on again with us. And, of course, Jimmy Toscano from Comcast Sports in New England. So that's going to be a fun conversation. We'll talk about how the Celtics looked going up against the San Antonio Spurs. Basically, a lot of stuff we talked about, we'll take a few different angles on it. We'll talk about the fact that David West signed with this team for $1 million and how fascinating that was. We'll show you the interview with LaMarcus Aldridge and, of course, all the other good stuff that I haven't even gotten to see yet from the Celtics locker room.
All good, Jared. Thanks so much. Don't forget to follow Jared on Twitter at @CLNS_JaredWeiss. See you after the game, Jared.
Thanks, guys. Justin, it's a pleasure.
No, the pleasure is mine, man. And hopefully I'll be able to join you somewhere near here in the future for a garden report. That would be just a dream.
That's going to be pretty awesome. I can't wait to do it.
Later, Jared. God, way too much gushing on that call. The locker room reporter. It's funny he mentions Toscano back in the day when I was doing post game shows for the Celtics late night show. You were doing them for CSL. Toscano was like our Jared Weiss.
Right.
No,
you're right.
Jimmy graduated. I did not, however. Another guy that knows you well. A lot of talks about the movie today, and you know who's coming next. It's the Scotsman.
Yeah.
Scotty, welcome to the FanDuel call lines on the Celtics postgame show, CLNS Radio. Gelso and Poulin, what's going on?
Guys, what the hell is going on? It's been a long time.
It's been a long time.
This is wild. Man, I feel like three old guys sitting in the bar talking about their glory days back in high school, you know, on this phone call. Holy crap. But good to be back with you guys, man. It really is. It's fun. You know, it's always fun transitioning from off season into Celtics basketball. You know, it takes me a little bit longer to get into the season now with everything going on with the family and everything, but it's always fun. You know, I get to see the games again, and you know, this one was tough. I mean, you know, it's the Spurs. You know, you kind of got what you expected tonight. You know, where the, you know, even if the Spurs didn't play perfect, you were still going to have to.
in order to beat them. I mean, just looking at the numbers real fast, you can't shoot 6 for 29 from the 3-point line and expect to beat the San Antonio Spurs. It's just not going to work out that way. I do like that we were aggressive going to the basket because they got a couple guys in there. Their backcourt is awful defensively. They rely pretty much on Kawhi Leonard for all their perimeter defense. You know, they hope Tim Duncan can maintain form for a little bit longer, but I like that we were attacking going to the basket. I think it was, 52 points in the paint tonight. I would have liked to have seen that a little bit more, and a little bit less reliance on the three-pointer tonight. But it is what it is. I mean, they showed fight. They're still around in the fourth quarter. A couple bounces go, the way, a couple calls go a different way here and there. And, the Celtics had a chance to come in and win this game. So, it's the difference tonight between the Spurs and the Celtics is that the Spurs have been there for a long time, and they've done this kind of thing plenty of times. We just haven't done it enough yet. I think that was the biggest difference tonight.
I like that. Justin, what's your take?
Yeah, I mean, it has been a long time, Scotty. You're very succinct.
Very, very focused. He's on. Scotty, what do you want? Adderall?
Totally, I really blowed away. Like,
I know. No mention of the
you're
rest.
You're like right on it.
Oh, I'll get to that.
He's
in a
not
minute.
Laughing. Oh, okay. He's got reference. Go ahead.
Well, no, I mean, like I said, there were a couple calls that obviously there was the one where they called the illegal pick on Jarebko.
I think
it was in the third or fourth quarter.
We had to wait for this, right?
This
sometimes
is the best
we
part
just
of
have
the
to
call.
Say, we have roles. We have roles and we're supposed to assume them. And, it just wouldn't have been the same. You know what, though? Scotty, I'm not even going to pick on you on this one because, the calls, I tweeted something about it. So here's my thought on the calls. Jarebko did get hosed twice, bad. And the problem is this. When they come out and they start flat, when they initially turn it up their gear, the refs they think it's out of desperation. So they think they're playing out of control. And it takes a few calls that aren't going to go their way for the refs to start seeing that they actually are playing with aggression and more crisp instead of just getting frustrated and playing out of control. And it's not always, I think basketball has got to be one of the hardest sports to officiate, and part of it's because of the way they nitpick all these rules now. There's too many details for anybody to keep it simple. And so they've got to get, there's guesswork that has to be involved. And, the whole points of emphasis kind of concepts, I think, are interesting. But I think you're right. They definitely did get hosed. And I think if this team comes out to start the game with more aggression in the future and more, just that passion, and they're attacking from minute one, they've got the depth to deal with fouls. They can take a few hits, put a guy on the bench, and bring him back out in the second half. But when they dictate tempo, they can survive the egregious foul calls that don't go their way that are just clearly phantom. And I think they paid the price for that. I don't know if you would agree, but, individually, you're right. There are some calls that were just way out of question or, that you definitely would bring into question.
Well, yeah, I mean, in a closer game, those individual calls, those, random one or two calls could potentially make a difference because, you look at it as an 8-point game. That Jarebko call was, even though it didn't result in a basket or take one away, it was potential 2 or 3 points there. Then you go down the other end, he gets called for a foul against Diaw, which I think ended up in a 3-point play. So you're looking at a 5 or 6 point swing right there, and that kind of has an effect on how the rest of the game dictates itself. So, there were a few, but I agree with you. I mean, like I said, you attack the basket a little bit more. I understand this whole new philosophy of, either at the rim or behind the 3-point line. I understand there's some, that stuff that Heinsohn hates. The numbers and the analytics prove that, 3-pointers are still better than mid-range shots. But, I just don't understand how shooting further away from the basket is still a better shot than shooting closer.
Yeah.
That much. I'm not against shooting the three, believe me. I love seeing it, but on a night like tonight where you're just the Spurs perimeter defense is just almost non-existent outside of Kawhi Leonard. Attack the basket, get their big guys in foul trouble.
Yep.
We only got to the line 14 times, and for, I mean, six of them was Isaiah Thomas. I just think that we have to get it in there, you know, do a couple friggin' head fakes or something with these bigs, you know, get them in there. But here's the thing. I heard you guys talking about it earlier. I like David Lee. I like his experience. I like, you know, the kind of player that he, you know, he can be potentially. I think that he's not as far removed from that, you know, 20 and, you know, 8 or, you know, 17 and 9 kind of player he was. I just don't think he should start. You know, I don't think Zeller should start. Zeller's not a starting center. He shouldn't be a starting center on this team. I like him off the bench. I think he's a very good player. He's got that good backup mentality. But you see the effect that Amir Johnson has when he comes into the game on both ends. You know, he's a huge, huge presence defensively in there, just, you know, causing issues for anybody around the basket. He's got a decent touch in the basket. He doesn't try to do too much. He's not out there forcing everything. I think you have to have Amir Johnson out there. Put Kelly Olynyk out there to start at the four. You know, it kind of helps spread the floor. It helps your philosophy with what Stevens wants to do. You know, so with Amir Johnson and Kelly, Jay Crowder, Smart, and Bradley out there, then you work your rotation and gradually by bringing in Thomas first, you know, for Marcus Smart, so Bradley can stay out there a little bit longer. You know, then you can work your other guys in there. Then you can kind of, you know, figure out who needs to fill in there, you know, when and why, you know, whether it be Jarebko coming in or Sullinger, you know, or if you need Zeller to come in, you know, let Amir Johnson stay out there for a little while if he's not in foul trouble. You know, just let them try to get into a little bit of a rhythm with that kind of starting lineup, and then you can bring in other guys. David Lee's a perfect
you know what, Scotty? You make a good point, and I've been wondering that too. Why aren't the best players in the starting lineup, with the exception of Thomas? Because I think Thomas is a sixth man. I think he fits that role well. And one of the themes we've been teasing the whole show is, as Smart gets better, maybe he ends up being able to take the reins down the fourth quarter, and Thomas loses that, you know, potentially. Maybe that never happens, but for continuity's sake, it might need to happen at some point. And you know, if it can happen, that's a, you know, it's a great problem to have. But I've been wondering why not the best players, because you make a great point, Amir Johnson. I think the only answer to that is that Brad likes to have Thomas come in with Amir Johnson and run pick and roll. But you brought up David Lee, and I think that's how they should work the bench. I agree with you. I think, you know, you have Kelly Olynyk and Amir Johnson on that starting line, and then you do your subs, you work your subs in, but maybe you put in the next sub after Thomas is Evan Turner, and he comes in for Bradley. So then what you give up in height with Thomas, you're gaining at the two with Turner. You know, that might be a little bit more of a cancel out. Then you've got a nice rebounding unit with Sully, and you maybe put Sully at center, and you use David Lee at power forward, and Lee can still run the pick and roll, and he can run it with Thomas. And since, you know, the players that they're going to be up against as these substitutions are happening are going to be the lesser players for the opposing team, you know, you might get a more net benefit. But I think there's some merit to what you're saying. You know, it looks like we're spreading out the talent so we can deliver an even product throughout the game, and that, you know, the guys are going to be playing with the right people. But you know, even for Marcus Smart and Avery Bradley's development, why wouldn't we have the best players possible on the floor with that unit, just so that they can also grow as players by being around better players?
Scotty, on that note, I got to let you go. We're running out of time. We still got the queue waiting. Are you hosting postgame shows this month in November?
I think I got one or two. I got a couple Friday or Saturday night games that I'll be doing. Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to getting on the air and, you know, pulling the homer card out a little bit. But before I go, I can't remember if I'd even mention it to Justin and Nick. I know you know, but in the most ironic twist of fate,
yes, this
Justin,
is great.
I ended up as a basketball referee as a second job, Justin. So,
no,
you know,
yes,
it, as
yes.
funny as that sounds, you know, one, I'm awesome at it. I'm much better than those clowns on TV, you know. But you know what? It was pretty. It was cool to get in there, take the class, and see what you do or you don't know. And let me tell you, there is a huge difference between high school, college, and the NBA. You know, that's what I'll say. I don't know how much I'm allowed to say, but you know, in this ironic job choice, I became a referee just because I wanted to see what it was like being the guy getting yelled at for once. So, you know, with that, you know, it's good to hear you guys again. You know, I appreciate everything you guys do and you've done over the years. You know, we'll have a virtual beer, you know, one way or another sometime. But, you know, good luck with the rest of the season, guys. Good luck with the rest of the show. And I'm sure I'll talk to you guys again soon.
Thanks,
rest
Scotty.
You know what, man? Scotty, I'm not even going to lie. You know, we've all gotten older, right? I feel like I've grown up. But that sound, he sounds like a more mature Scotsman. I mean, even the tone of his voice. But I will tell you, him going and becoming a referee was a very
great
decision.
Yeah,
why not go and figure out what it is that he has to complain about? I mean, if you're going to complain, you might as well be an educated complainer, right? You ought to know fully what you're talking about. And he really took that to a whole nother level. And,
like,
and I don't mean
like
that facetiously.
No, but it's like a Democrat watching Fox News. You've got to be informed on both sides.
Right.
Scotty's doing it, man. Scotty's doing it. And you know what? You should hear him out. He is a great post-game show analyst. It's not all. We made an agreement. It's a handshake. It's not going to be all about the refs. We give him about 3 minutes every post-game show that he hosts and he rants. But for the most part, I mean, not for the most. He is totally right on point with a good portion of what he says. Now, if I asked him his playoff prediction, he'd have the Celtics in the finals already this year. So, you know, still the Scotsman. What are you going to do?
Well, everybody's got a role to play. You know what I mean? And you don't want to lose your role.
I miss that guy,
you know. He and I, I remember when we went to the premiere for the movie and neither of us had seen it. You know, it was a fun night to actually meet him after having talked to him on the phone for so long, you know, meet him in person and watch this movie that, you know, we'd invested in for 6 months. So
that's crazy.
Good, man. It's good to hear his voice. Good to hear a lot of voices on this show tonight.
Well, you're going to know the next voice too, but before we go to Coach Q, I want to let our listeners know that CLNS Radio is giving away tickets to the Celtics Hawks game on Friday, November 13th. Great game. All you have to do is go and download the free mobile app, CLNS Radio mobile app for iOS or Android. It's real easy, clnsradio.com/iOS free for Apple users and clnsradio.com/Android for Android users. Download it, rate and review the app, and you're in the running for 2 tickets to Friday, November 13th versus the Hawks. And on that note, let's go to Coach Q. He has been so patiently waiting. Q, what's going on, man? You're here with Justin Poulin and Nick Gelso.
Oh, it's a beautiful day out here in Newport Beach. 2 days ago, I was had the pleasure of attending the first 2 games of the season. The first game Wednesday night, we won that game. Then Thursday night, I complained about the Celtics being flat when, in fact, Toronto's probably a better team at this stage of the game. And even the real coach, Brad Stevens, will tell you that they are better at this point. But I look for the Celtics to improve as the season goes along and hopefully break down and pass the Raptors at some point in the season. But, you know, it's a work in progress. Today, the Celtics did compete effectively all the way through. You know, they did fall behind by 15 points, and they still had the fight and the energy to get back in the game. And you know, they had some chances to at least tie them, being down 2 possessions. But you know, once again, if you have LaMarcus Aldridge and David West and Kawhi Leonard who's that other guy that shoots threes? Daniel Green.
Just
too much talent on that side of the on that team. Too much experience to overcome. So you really can't afford.
You talk about depth, right, Q?
Yeah.
I mean,
yes.
That team is disgustingly deep. I mean, even David West. I mean, we talk about our David Lee, being older and not the player he once was. But David West is basically in the exact same position for that team.
Mm-hmm.
And he's really way down the bench. right?
And
right. David Lee is one of our guys, you know, out four in the mix for, you know, front court that really hasn't really established anybody but Johnson.
Who's making more money here, David Lee or David West?
Right.
Right.
Yeah, for one more year, though.
Yeah, you know, it's kind of like, and then they have, of course, they have the NBA's answer to Tom Brady and Tim Duncan over there, you know, who plays for a fraction of his worth, right?
Yep.
You know, well, and he's always been a team first guy. Yeah.
And I expect to see the Spurs in the finals this year.
You talk about depth, too, on the Spurs, you know, Duncan, and you talk about passing of the guard, too. Duncan, Parker, Ginobili, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Duncan and Parker, 13 points combined. And the way Pop manages minutes is it's unbelievable. No one over 34 minutes, Duncan 28 minutes. Yet he still hits the big shot in the fourth quarter from his, you know, the elbow where he loves to shoot.
Because he's fresh and has the energy
he's
to
fresh.
Do it. And the experience to the experience to execute and the alertness to do it. You know, that's important, especially as you get older. You know, you
this
can't be going
Duncan's
out there 40 minutes a night
either.
Anymore.
Yeah. This was not Duncan's best game either.
No.
By any stretch of the imagination. But what's funny and what we can always – the reason this matchup is always so entertaining is because we can only hope that the Celtics are, you know, getting to where the Spurs are, but in a different way, right? Because the Spurs got lucky when the Celtics didn't. They got Duncan, and then they built from there.
Right.
You know, we've never actually had that number one overall.
Who's
pick.
Our best player? Is it Isaiah Thomas or Jared
Isaiah
Collinger?
Yeah.
Don't tell me Evan Turner.
No. Cue on that note, man. We're gonna wrap it up. We're already in archive mode here in podcast mode. We're no longer live, so I want to thank you so much for waiting. Give us your. It'd still be heard on iTunes, but give us your closing thoughts.
Oh, my closing thoughts. I'm going to do this for Justin. And is John Duke on there today?
He's not. He's in parts unknown.
He's not.
Justin. Yeah, he is not on today.
No, we're going
to. Okay.
They
always like one of my Johnny Most imitations. So
I remember
I call the last play of the Super Bowl the way Johnny Most would have done it. All right. Wilson will go back to pass and it's intercepted by Butler. Butler stole the ball. It's the 3-yard line. It's Patriots ball, first and 10. Butler stole a ball. Butler stole a ball. He's being robbed by his teammates. It's all over. It's all over.
Man, that's the best. Some things never change, man. Thanks, Coach.
Okay, we'll talk to you next time.
We gotta, Justin, pull Duke out of retirement.
Yeah, we're gonna have to reach out to him and try to finagle something, you know. Like I said, I'm hoping to contribute as much as I can this year. It was definitely a lot of fun to be back on the air and, you know, talking to old friends. I mean, there wasn't a caller I didn't know tonight, except for Nick. And, you know, I kind of got ready for him by listening to some of the most recent shows. But, hey, look, Spurs are tough. They're really not our mark for this season. Our mark for this season is the Raptors. You know, you got to try to take this division, and that's the team that's in the way. I think Stevens is learning some things about this team. Nobody sets themselves apart. We know we're going to have to tinker for a little while. And really, the shining light or the reason for optimism through the first few months is just the fact that he did figure that out after numerous trades, put the pieces together, and they had the second-best record in the East to finish out, you know, the year after the All-Star break. So I think we can hope for that. If you don't have that, and, you know, you're struggling through a tough year no matter what if you fade down the stretch. So right now let's just watch this team come together a little bit. And, you know, it's exciting to get people on the line. And, you know, we're trying to make as much sense of it as Brad is while he's doing it on the fly. I think this, you know, like I said, this is what was fun in the early days of Celtic Stuff Live. And at some point, you know, I was in the back part of the garden interviewing players who just had confetti, you know, all over them.
Yeah, that's crazy.
And the rise to the top is always what's fun. And I think there's the time frame is still unclear. but this organization is taking steps in the right direction. There's a lot of picks. Everybody knows the state of the club.
Yep.
So, you know, maybe not this year, not next year, who knows, but it's coming some year, and it's always fun to just watch the team evolve and watch some of these players evolve. And I think we learned something about Marcus Smart tonight. I'm telling you, we're going to look back in 6 months, and this is going to be a game we're going to talk about with him.
That's great closing words from Justin. My words are, Celtics Nation, brace yourselves, because they're already complaining after two games they were complaining. November is an extremely tough schedule, all the way up until we probably get Brooklyn back-to-back, the 20th and the 22nd, which, you know, hopefully they're two wins and Brooklyn continues to tank. But it's going to be a tough month. So, you know, hang in there. And keep the faith, because we know what happened last season. Let's get these tough games out of the way early on. It's good learning for the team, and that's what I'll close with. And, Justin, I just want to thank you so much. This was a blast from the past and a lot of fun, and people are really excited about it as well. So hopefully we'll hear from you quite a bit this year, my friend.
Yeah, it'll be my pleasure. I'd really enjoy it. And it's funny because while we were doing the show, I got a text message from a very, very good friend of mine who, during the Antoine and Paul Pierce years, we were roommates, and we went back and forth. And he was at the game today and introduced his stepson to Mike Gorman, who passed along Justin's a great guy. Tell him I said hi, you know. And it was just funny that happened right now as I'm back on the show. Like,
it's
literally, I got a picture text message, you know, with a picture of Mike with his stepson, and then you know, Mike says hi. So it's just, you know, the irony. Some things are just meant to happen.
And they're just meant to happen, man. On that note, Nick Gelso for Justin Poulin. We'll see you Wednesday night after the Indiana game. And have a great night, Celtics fans. Keep the faith.